Ladies and gentlemen, children of all ages, gather round the radio. It's time for another installment of A Touch of Grey, the talk show for grown-ups. My name is Michael Harrison. It's my privilege to serve as anchor of the program. It's an ensemble show with lots of good people. The host of the program is Carol Marks. Carol is one of America's leading experts on upper demographic issues and a champion in the battle against ageism. And, of course, we have Steve Wiseman, our attorney, who will be talking to us later in the program, and a whole cast of characters. Today, however, Carol's taken the week off, and I'm going to be doing the interview chores, and it's going to be a lot of fun because it brings me back to the days of my rock and roll adventures. I am very excited after some 41 years of being aware of this gentleman and his artistry to actually have a chance to talk to him. His name is Roger Earle, and he is the drummer, and he is the ongoing member from the beginning to the present day of one of the great album rock bands from the day, and they, like so many of the great bands from the 60s and 70s and 80s, are still going strong with fans, making records, doing concerts. The group is Foghat, and our guest is, as I mentioned, Roger Earle. Welcome to the program. It's great to have you.
Hi, Michael. It's nice to be here. Thank you very much for having me. I'm kind of looking forward to this. It will be fun.
Yes, it's. I enjoy talking about the old days as well as the new days, and they're so connected. Don't you find that when you're out there and you're playing the music and you're in the recording studio and you're dealing with the record business and you're dealing with promoters and fans and generations, that having all this experience at this point in your life, and certainly I find it in my life, and this whole show is dedicated to people who've been around the block a few times, don't you find that experience really comes in handy in navigating the world?
Yeah, it's, but you know, the interesting thing for me is that, we've been doing this for I've been playing professionally since about 1966, and the interesting thing is that, you know, when we're out there now, we have a lot of younger people coming to see us, you know, like 16 to maybe 25, 30. That's really refreshing for me. And I guess it sort of seems to say that maybe the music we created back in the 70s and early 80s, you know, it stood the test of time. What was that band? The Stones. It's only rock and roll, but I like it.
Exactly. And yeah. I find also, and I think that this is exciting. And again, I'm not a person who lives in the past. I live in the present and the future. And I think it's very important to do that. So when I talk about old rock and roll, I don't see myself as an oldies act or an oldies DJ or an oldies anything. But I do believe that music is particularly interesting to young people today simply because it was really hip, really cool, really good, and really colorful. I mean, those were colorful days. And you can't deny it. When we talk like this, it feels like we're talking about the good old days, and I don't want to sound like an old, you know, geezer, but those were very colorful days.
You're right, they were. But I think, for me, anyway, it was the type of music. It's basically, American blues, rock and roll, rhythm and blues music. And that kind of music is acknowledged all over the world. You know, it transcends barriers, language, and otherwise. Jazz, blues, rock and roll. It's huge in China and Belgium and India and I don't know about Pakistan. We'll have to hear about that.
Probably in Pakistan.
It's in American music.
It is very American, no question about
it. And I think when I first started playing, that's what I used to listen to. I joined a record club in, I grew up in London, but I joined a record club in Chicago, and I would get these lists of great blues tunes sent to me, once a month, and I'd look at it and I'd go, Howlin' Wolf. He has to be great with a name like that. But it's basically American music, and, it's what I grew up listening to. And, back in the day, we sort of listened to records and would try and copy them, but, we didn't actually copy them. We put our rendition on it. So
the British interpretation of early American blues and early American rock and roll that I grew up with, being a kid growing up on this side of the Atlantic, was very exotic. When I first heard the Beatles, the first time I heard the Beatles, they were presented by a DJ. I heard them the first time. He said, "This is a novelty record, British rock and roll." Because the idea of British rock and roll was not something that we really knew about. British rock and roll, it sounded like a novelty. And they sounded like four Everly Brothers with British accents and a very, very exotic harmony. The Beatles sounded exotic, and the Rolling Stones sounded exotic to the kids. I was, 14, 13 years old, experiencing this major transition, the British invasion. And then, of course, it became very normal. But that exotic sound was really the British interpretation of an earlier American sound, whereas you guys growing up there, I guess Howlin' Wolf and all of the stuff that, you listened to sounded pretty exotic to you.
Yeah, it did. And I'm not sure, like when I was first listening to this music, as a teenager, actually 12, 13 was when I really started. I didn't always understand the innuendo of early blues and rock and roll music. But I got it later on as I started to grow up. But there was a magic about it. There was an honesty about early American blues music and rock and roll music. It was it just grabbed hold of me and never let go. I mean, I still listen to one of my favorite albums is Johnny Burnett and the Rock and Roll Trio that was recorded in 1955-56, and it's the whole basis for rockabilly and rock and roll music. They took country, big band music, and put their thing on it, and Hank Williams. I mean, I'm a big fan of Hank Williams. I mean, incredible songs, but it's not really what you do. It's what you do to it or with it, and it was exciting. And I still get excited about listening to music. I love to go out and play. I haven't lost any of my enthusiasm for that. In fact, I think I'm real fortunate. Careful what you wish for, right?
Well, yeah, you're gonna be stuck doing it for a while, but that's a blessing. The fact that you're still doing it is a blessing, and you should be very proud of it and value that ability.
I do. Yes. In fact, we talk about it with the band. I mean, back in the 70s, the 60s and 70s, it was pretty crazy, but whenever the band went to play on stage, we were always sober, or relatively sober, maybe a play with a couple of hangovers. But the partying and everything else was saved for afterwards. It was music is it was so special to me and to us. It's you don't really want to screw with it. I mean, I enjoy that hour and a half or whatever it is I get up there to play. It's makes the whole day worthwhile. It's a joyous thing to be able to, playing drums in a rock and roll band. I love my work.
Of course. How often do you play? What is your schedule like at this point in your life?
In the summer, mostly there's about a 6 to 8 month period where we'll play two or three times a week. About 90% of the shows are fly-ins. We fly in. We carry, I carry my snare drum, pedals, cymbals, and sticks. The promoters supply their DW drum kit to my specs. The guitar players bring their pedal boards and guitars, and amplifiers are supplied to our specs. So it's a lot easier than, I'd say, back in the day when we'd be traveling by bus all the time and lugging all our own gear around. I played two or three times a week. Mostly weekends, and so during the week I get to go fishing, whack the little white balls around, hang out with the grandchildren, fiddle around in the garden, and the life is good. I mean, I have to admit that I don't miss going on the road for 6, 8, 12 months of the year. I guess it was okay, when I was younger, but I don't miss that. No, it's worked out great at the moment. We're playing to, you know, pretty large audiences. Like we just played in Oregon. We did two shows out there last week. There was like 10 to 12,000 people there. We played in Des Moines, Iowa. There was like 8,000 people. It's pretty amazing.
He's a cool guy. That's Roger Earl, the drummer and founding member for the rock band Foghat. If you want more information, go to foghat.net. That's foghat.net. And, of course, we have much more conversation with Roger Earl coming your way on this program when A Touch of Grey, the talk show for grown-ups, continues in a moment.
More than 100 million wild animals are killed each year, illegally. Poaching is just one of the risks animals face at our hands. I'm Tom Barry. I'm an actor. I grew up in the beautiful rural countryside of Ohio, where animals roam freely in the open forests. I have a deep concern to help preserve those open spaces for our wildlife friends so they can live and thrive like they used to. Destruction of their habitats threaten their very existence. The best way to protect wildlife is to protect the land where they live. The Humane Society Wildlife Land Trust works with private landowners to protect wildlife, to preserve natural habitats, and establish permanent sanctuaries. To learn more or to work with the Humane Society Wildlife Land Trust, call 800-729-SAVE. That's 800-729-SAVE. Or visit wildlifelandtrust.org. Thank you.
Continuing now with A Touch of Grey, the talk show for grown-ups, Michael Harrison here in the anchor chair, and back to a conversation that I am having with the drummer and founding member of the rock band Foghat, Roger Earl. In keeping with the spirit of this program, we talk about health issues, we talk about aging gracefully. You and I are both you and I are both in the same aging gracefully. It's kind of an oxymoron. You and I are both in the same basic demographic. How physical is it for you to be playing those drums for an hour and a half? I've watched your videos. I've seen you perform. It's a very physical thing. It's like going for a run. It's like working out in the gym. Playing drums is very physical. How do you deal with that? Is it like a workout to you? Do you find yourself exhausted at a certain point? Is it more difficult at this age than it was 10 years ago, 20 years ago?
There is a physical aspect to playing drums, and also, you know, with the type of music we play, there's an attitude you've got to have. It's not like we sit up there and we're sort of playing light or anything. I mean, I'm still hammering the drums and kicking them. But I've always tried to stay fit, even, throughout my whole career. I used to run a lot. I used to run all the time. I was a long distance runner when I was a kid in school. I gave up running about 12 years ago. The knees just weren't happy about it.
Believe me, I understand.
I exercise, I stretch, I use light weights, sort of rubber or bands. I ride a bike, I walk. Linda and I, my wife, we have a canoe, so we do that as well. I keep active. I eat well. I sometimes drink too much, but usually wine. I stay fit, and there is that physical aspect about playing is important. I practice just about every day, certainly before I play. I'll sit in my hotel room for about an hour on the pad and on the pedals, and then when I get to the gig, I have another about half an hour or so just to get warm and stretch and go for it. I've had a couple of health issues over the years. I fell about 8 years ago. No, it wasn't that long, about 6 years ago, and broke my back.
Oh, my.
Which is pretty, it was scary. I would get up on stage to check the monitors before we were going on.
Oh, my God.
And I turned to step off the side, and there was nothing there.
Oh,
my. There was a curtain that came down level with my drum riser, but there was nothing behind. So,
oh, my.
That was pretty scary. Up to that point, I'd never really broken anything, but I'm laying there on the floor, like, with the excruciating pain. And But they picked me up. I had this thing called kyphoplasty. I crushed 3 vertebrae in my back. And the local doctors out here in New York, where I live, fixed me up. They said, you know, it's going to take 2 or 3 months or more. Broke my shoulder, my clavicle.
Oh, geez.
So they did a real good job. And I worked real hard at getting, you know, my muscle tone back and working out. Also, I take a lot of supplements, you know, glucosamine, chondroitin, all that kind of stuff. You know, strontium, that's some good stuff for bone density. Yeah, I read up on all that stuff. I don't think I have Keith Richards' health disposition where he can do anything he wants. I have to work at it.
Well, we all do to one degree or another, and I'm sure he does too. You were originally, the first band that I remember you being in was a group called Savoy Brown.
Right.
And to guys like me who were part of the progressive rock movement in radio, Savoy Brown was a major band back in the early 70s.
Yeah.
You find any, do people remember Savoy Brown anymore? Is that just now that only guys like me would remember?
I think so. On our last album, Last Train Home, which is like a blues album, a tribute to the blues anyway, and we did a Savoy Brown song on there, Needle and Spoon. I stay in touch with Kim Simmons, who was the original guitar player, and it's his band. In fact, about 3 months ago, I inducted Kim Simmons into the New York Blues Hall of Fame at a jazz club in Manhattan called the Iridium. And I got down there in the afternoon, and I went up and saw Kim, and I said, they've asked me to induct you today. So he gave me a look like, oh dear, the drummer's inducting me. Kim Simmons is playing great. He still has Savoy Brown together. I got up and sat in with him. But the band, Savoy Brown, yeah, it was, that was the first real band that I was in. I joined when I was just 20, I think.
Wow.
And, I'll tell you a short story about that. I auditioned one time and I didn't get the first audition with them. Then they called me up a couple of weeks later because I guess the drummer they got didn't work out. His name was Bill Bruford, I think. And anyway, I went in there and I played for about 2 hours with them, went through all these songs. And I packed my drums up. I borrowed my father's car that day, and I was going back to work. I worked as a commercial artist in London. And they said, where are you going? I said, I want to go back to my day job. Why? He said, we have a gig in Birmingham tonight.
Wow. Hey, congratulations. You're a member of the band. You made the team.
Yeah.
And that was it for your commercial art career. It's interesting.
Well, actually, no, I didn't get paid for about 6 weeks during that time. After about 2 weeks, I was playing about 2 or 3 days a week, and then I would go into work at the studio that I worked in. After about 2 weeks, I went into the office where the band's manager was. His name is Harry Simmons. I said, Harry, I haven't got paid yet. And he was Welsh. He said, you haven't got paid, boy. Oh dear, we'll see about that then. So another 2 weeks passed. He said, I hadn't got paid. So I go in and say, hey, Harry, you know, I've done about 10 gigs and I haven't got paid yet. He said, you haven't got paid, boy. Oh, we'll see about that then. So by this time, I figured, I don't know what to do. So then I started auditioning for a few other people. I auditioned for Jimi Hendrix, Crazy World of Arthur Brown, a couple of other people. And then I think after about 6 weeks, they started paying me. But it was a great experience. It was a lot of fun, and I enjoyed every moment. And of course, it was the first chance I got to come to the States, and it felt like coming home when I first got here.
Now, when you transitioned into the group Foghat, The group was it was a big group in our libraries in those days. I remember that. You know, we sort of operated in our own world, the rock stations, the album rockers. And Foghat, you had that very, very big hit. I guess we'd call it an anthem called Slow Ride and Fool for the City and I Just Want to Make Love to You. Those three songs, you still play them, I imagine you have to play them. People want to hear that, right?
Yeah, but that's okay. I mean, Foghat never recorded anything that we didn't want to do. It was always the band's choice, you know, what songs we did or didn't do. And again, you know, all those songs are based in with a rock and roll blues thing, like Slow Ride. Slow Ride is basically a John Lee Hooker riff. Instead of playing it like a shuffle, it was like a 4/4. I Just Want to Make Love to You is, you know, a classic blues song performed by Muddy Waters and written by Willie Dixon. Actually, there's an interesting story about Fool for the City. We were up in Vermont on the top of this mountain, Sharon, Vermont, recording. And after we'd been recording, working all day, and, you know, we'd got pretty much the arrangement down for Fool for the City, we're sitting there having a glass of wine with Dave, our original singer. I said, "Hey, Dave, how many chords are in Fool for the City?" He said, and he knew where I was going with this. He said, "Three." I said, "Really? It sounds like there's more." He said, "Oh, the other ones don't matter. They're just parting chords."
Now, what does that mean musically for people that don't understand that? They're what kind of chords? I'm sorry.
You know, blues and rock and roll is all based generally around a three-chord progression. Mm-hmm. And my older brother, Colin, who's a piano player, once said, "Anything other than three chords has to be viewed with a certain amount of suspicion."
Roger Earl, conversation I recently had with Roger Earl, the member of Foghat, the founding member, the drummer. He's been with the band 41 years, and they are still on the road. They are still making records, and they're still going strong, and they're still a great rock and roll band. I'm Michael Harrison. We have more of our conversation with Roger Earl of Foghat coming up when A Touch of Grey, the talk show for grown-ups, continues in a moment.
You want a piece of me?
You want a piece of me?
You want a piece of me?
They're not movie tough guys, just ordinary people doing something extraordinary. They're all signed up on matchingdonors.com, willing to donate their kidney to anyone who needs it. In the U.S., 19 people die each day waiting for an organ transplant, most of them for kidneys. Matchingdonors.com improves those odds by finding living altruistic donors for patients desperately needing transplants. Go to matchingdonors.com and meet some extraordinary people. That's matchingdonors.com.
Want to stay informed when there are changes to Social Security? Subscribe to receive automatic email updates on popular Social Security websites. Pages with the click of a button. Just visit www.socialsecurity.gov/govdelivery. More than 1 million people already receive updates to the pages they're most interested in. You can too. Look for the red envelope followed by a link that says Get Email Updates. To learn more, visit www.socialsecurity.gov/govdelivery. Social Security delivers.
This is a Driving Today Minute. Even though high gasoline prices have moderated somewhat, they're still quite high. It just makes good sense to do what you can do to reduce your fuel costs. The Alliance to Save Energy suggests a few easy things you can do.
Keep your car properly tuned up and change the air filter regularly, both to save gas and protect your engine. Curtail aggressive driving, according to the U.S. Department of Energy. Speeding, rapid acceleration, and hard braking waste gas and curb mileage by as much as 33% at highway speeds.
So nix the jackrabbit starts and opt instead for slow acceleration from a dead stop. Slow down. The DOE says each mile per hour you drive over 60 is like paying an extra 10 cents per gallon. Inflate tires to the proper pressure. This will increase fuel economy and make tires safer and extend their life.
This Driving Today Minute is brought to you by Bridgestone Firestone Tires. You can get more information like this at drivingtoday.com or by visiting our partners such as autobytel.com, motorsportsforum.com, and more.
You're listening to A Touch of Gray,
Check out our website at atouchofgray.com. We spell gray with an E. That's atouchofgray.com. We spell gray with an E.
Hi, I'm Sigourney Weaver. If you're like me, your dog or cat is part of the family, and they rely on you to take care of them. Like a family doctor, your veterinarian and staff know what's best for that special family member. So visit your vet regularly for checkups, for prevention of disease like heartworm, and for the best advice on everyday issues like flea and tick control. Your veterinarian knows best, so take the time to ask questions. For healthy pets, visit the vet.
A message from the American Animal Hospital Association.
You're age 65 and you've made your decision to keep working and delay receiving your benefits. That's fine, but don't forget about Medicare. Most people should apply for Medicare coverage within 4 months of reaching age 65. And there's a fast, convenient, and simple way to apply for Medicare in as little as 10 minutes. Online at www.socialsecurity.gov/Medicare only. That's socialsecurity.gov/Medicare only.
Engines.
Check.
Thrusters.
Check.
Fuel.
Check.
Computers.
Check.
Social Security.
No check, go direct.
That's right, Patty. A few weeks ago, I went online to godirect.org to sign up for direct deposit. It's easy to do, and I got my cash at warp speed.
Wow, it's fast and easy. I'll sign up right now to make sure I'm prepared for our next mission.
Carol Marks is one of America's leading experts on upper demographic issues and a champion in the battle against ageism in our society. Her fabulous new book, Modern Aging, A Guide for Seasoned Citizens to Achieve Health, Happiness, and Purpose, published by Talkers Books, is a major breakthrough in providing a maturing population with vital information and inspiration to live better and more productive lives. Carol Marks offers practical strategies for juggling work, romance, and navigating the healthcare system. She is a guide through the maze of grandparenting, technology, travel, and retirement, as well as facing the sandwich generation's struggle of supporting adult children and elderly parents. Modern Aging by Carol Marks is available now at www.talkersbooks.com. That's www.talkersbooks.com.
If you plan to apply for Social Security disability benefits, there are things you can do to help speed up the usual 3 to 5 month wait for a decision. The more information you provide up front, the less time it'll take us to obtain the needed evidence, and the faster the decision can be made. Information like medical records or documentation, the names, addresses, and phone numbers of your doctors and medical facilities, information on your past employment, and more. To be prepared, visit www.socialsecurity.gov/disability and select Disability Starter Kits.
Hi, I'm Sigourney Weaver. If you're like me, your dog or cat is part of the family, and they rely on you to take care of them. Like a family doctor, your veterinarian and staff know what's best for that special family member. So visit your vet regularly for checkups, for prevention of disease like heartworm, and for the best advice on everyday issues like flea and tick control. Your veterinarian knows best, so take the time to ask questions. For healthy pets, visit the vet.
A message from the American Animal Hospital Association.
Engines.
Check.
Thrusters.
Check.
Fuel.
Check.
Computers.
Check.
Social Security.
No check, go direct.
That's right, Patty. A few weeks ago, I went online to godirect.org to sign up for direct deposit. It's easy to do, and I got my cash at warp speed.
Wow, it's fast and easy. I'll sign up right now to make sure I'm prepared for our next mission.
Continuing now with A Touch of Gray, the talk show for grown-ups. I'm Michael Harrison in the anchor chair. Carol Marks is taking this weekend off, and I'm doing the big interview this week. And the big interview this week comes up to part three of our three-part conversation with the great drummer, the great rock and roll man, the great member of Foghat. And Foghat's still out there doing their thing, 41 years on the road and in the studio, making records and making rock and roll. Here's part three of our conversation today with Roger Earl. Your brother, you mentioned you have a brother who's a piano player. Your brother was in that fabulous group that I only experienced in passing because they never really had many hits here. They had one hit in this country. We played about two or three when I was at WNEW-FM in New York. Mungo Jerry. I just found out that your brother was the piano player in Mungo Jerry. And That was a original sounding group if I ever heard one. In the summertime, still gets played all the time here. But they had some pretty wild stuff on some of their other stuff that never made it to this country. And that's kind of an interesting aspect to your whole deal, because if I'm correct, and tell me if I'm right, your latest single called The Word of Rock and Roll, which has an interesting story attached to it, and we'll talk about that in a moment, but the piano in that, which is it's like classic rock and roll, boogie woogie, Jerry Lee Lewis, every great 1950s riff you've ever heard, has come alive again in The Word of Rock and Roll, this single that you have, and that's your brother playing the piano, isn't it?
When we were recording our last album, Colin got busy with life and band, as did I, and so we didn't always get a chance to sort of play music together. But when we were doing this album, Last Train Home, Colin came over to the States and stayed here for 3 or 4 months with me. And we were in the studio one day, and, you know, we had this piano, and I said, you know, play a couple of tunes, Sol. And he played it, and everybody said, wow, that's great. And we went through it once, you know, to get the arrangement down, and then played it again. Yeah, Colin's a fantastic piano player. He's schooled in, you know, that Jerry Lee Lewis, Little Richard kind of thing. He's got a great left hand. My father also was a piano player. In fact, when we first started getting into music, I wanted to play piano, but my father played and Colin played, so I picked up the drums instead.
Well, at least you could have at least half of a band that way. And the piano in The Word of Rock and Roll, as I said, is about as classic as possible. And when I heard that, I said to myself, this record is as fresh as it is old. It is brand new.
Yeah. It was a lot of fun doing it.
Now, the story behind this, originally that was on Last Train Home, it was an instrumental, and Foghat doesn't do a lot of instrumentals, and it was an instrumental, and it became very popular, and then you had a contest where you opened up the opportunity to your fans to write words to, what's the name of an interstate? The name of the instrumental, the boogie.
It was 495 Boogie.
Yeah, 495
Boogie. A tribute to the Long Island Expressway, I guess.
Right. Like it needs a tribute, but that's okay. It's definitely the best thing that ever happened to the Long Island Expressway. But the word of rock and roll was written by a fan, and you re-recorded it, and now you've got a song that's getting played out there, and keeping Foghat in the minds of people again. What's the story behind that song?
As you were saying, it was done as an instrumental called 495 Booty. There was a DJ lived down in Alabama. His name is Charlie Ocean. We were good friends with, and he wrote some lyrics and recorded them and sent them to us, called Big American Blonde. Well, it was, you know how you DJs are. It was a little bit risque. It would never have got played on the radio. But the idea was cemented in us about doing that. And unfortunately, Charlie passed away in July of 2011. But his idea stayed on, and we had a competition with bands to write lyrics and send them in to us. But they had to sort of actually sing on it. On the demo that they sent to us, and a guy called Phil Dessinger won. We got down to about three people. There was a number of songs, and actually the standard of lyrics was very impressive, as were some of the singers as well. A good friend of mine, Ken Dasher, was a DJ at WAXQ in New York, and Jeb Wright of Classic Rock Revisited also were like, I guess, judges, if you will. Mm-hmm. And we picked the version called The Word of Rock and Roll by Phil Dessinger. And we did it. Charlie did the vocals on it, and we redid it, and it's out now. So, it's very interesting. The first time we'd ever done anything like that.
Did you re-record the instrumentation, or is it the same instrumentation from the original track?
The same instrumentation. we just remixed it with the vocal track.
Great.
You know, because we have our own studio, so down in Florida, we can do whatever we want. It's in the middle of nowhere. It's in between Orlando and New Smyrna Beach. Like on 10 acres, we only annoy the birds and the fish. And, you know, no red lights. We just go in there, usually around January, February, March, April, when it's a bit slow, and record, relearn some new songs for the upcoming touring season and put stuff together. And, we just redid the vocal track and remixed it.
The words really are very good. They fit the music to a T, but even more so, they also have a message about the spirit of rock and roll, the word of rock and roll.
Yeah, it's very positive. That's one of the things I liked about it.
Yes, indeed. And I find both of them to be really, really very strong. And I congratulate you for having such sharp and hot music out there that is appealing to people of all ages. As we come to the conclusion of our discussion, what are your views of the music industry and the music culture here in 2013? Where do you think it's going? Are you optimistic? Are you pessimistic? How do you feel about music today?
Going down the toilet. No, you know what? I think every generation has its day. We still have three or four records that are played regularly on, classic rock radio. A lot of the bands today. I think every generation has its music, and I think, you know, it also helps define a generation, the type of music, you know, that's coming out of that time. What do I think of it? I don't know whether it would be fair to me to sort of judge it. Music is something that's very personal to people. I don't really listen to it. I mean, I consider, like, the Chili Peppers and Pearl Jam new band, so...
Yeah,
that might give you an idea.
What happens when we get older. Time goes faster. So to a 20-something, 1 year is like a decade. To a 60-something, 10 years is like 1 year. It's funny how that works. We have a different perception of time. Do you find that there is more of a social media entrepreneurism today, that the day of the big label and the gatekeeper and the big radio station is giving way to smaller companies and people running their own ship, their own labels, their own concert packaging, more of a one-on-one relationship with their fans? That's my observation. What do you think?
Yeah, there is. I mean, we have our own record company, and, we have our own label. We have our own recording studio. We don't sell records like we used to, or the amount, but it's very rewarding, and it's not just us. There's a lot of people that are doing it, but the world changed, the way we listen to music, the way we record music. I mean, there was a time, back in like the late 70s, early 80s, we had our own studio here in New York. We had a Neve board which cost nearly $2 million, and whereas now we can put a studio together for maybe $10,000.
Right.
The microphones are probably the most expensive part of that. And in lots of ways, I enjoy it. It gives us a lot of freedom. And the record companies, that's changed in time, where there aren't very many record companies left other than, I guess, the rap, hip-hop artists would have their own records, but it's it doesn't sell the same. The market has changed. The way people listen to music has changed. What annoys me? When people come up and they put a phone up to my face and say, listen to this. And I said, what are you talking about? That's not music. It's just this, buzz going on. Get some decent speakers or a great set of, headphones, So I don't quite get that aspect of it.
I miss the...
Nice set of JBLs, like, cranking in your living room. I mean, that's how you should listen to music.
Yeah, I agree. That's something that passed me by, too. I'm very frustrated about that. I remember how important in the 70s and the 80s listening to the Fidelity and good stereo headphones, big speakers. A lot of that's considered dated. But when I see people listening to music in these teeny little earbuds that don't fit your ears well, it reminds me of the earlier days of rock and roll when producers would do the final mix on a transistor radio-sized speaker.
That's right.
Am I right?
That's exactly right, yeah.
It's like we've gone backwards.
Actually, I read an article a little while ago about Rick Rubin and how he likes to listen to his stuff. He's got his like, a little cassette player that he puts stuff on, and then he has to listen to it to see if it's working or not. I thought that was kind of interesting. Yeah. I've never met Rick Rubin, but I think he must be a fascinating character.
No question. But, you know, it was awesome in the heyday when we went from that... When we went to stereo, we went to hi-fi, and I remember that. I remember hi-fi. I remember before stereo, how amazing it was. Or going from AM to FM to hear the clarity, to hear instruments that you never heard. And I have to admit, it was, you know, I still use a lot of old hippie terms, but it was pretty trippy having music go through your head. Maybe they overdid the left-right panning thing a bit, but... That was kind of wild. Do you remember the first time you heard that? You know, the stereo going in the headphones.
Yeah.
It felt like it was traveling across your brain.
Yeah, I had a little bit of an issue with like the way they would sometimes mix drums. I mean, you'd have to have awfully long arms. you know, like, it'd be one tom-tom on one side. We never actually mixed the drums quite that radical, but you know, you put guitars. You know, sort of left and right drums just off center along with the bass. But, that part of it was fun. And especially when you put the headsets on and you could listen to things moving around in there. And especially when they're, you know, like the late 60s, the psychedelic era.
Oh, yeah. That certainly played into it as well. Well, listen, I could talk...
One thing is that they're making great headphones these days, so... That's something worthwhile, I think, that's come out of it.
Well, I hope that they make a comeback, and I hope to see people with bigger headphones on the subways in New York and places where you see people listening. And one other very quick thing about the buds is people don't listen in groups anymore. They listen alone. And there was something, and this affects radio, there was something about listening to music where everybody was listening together as opposed to listening by yourself that had a different experience. There's so many aspects to this. You and I could talk forever. I am... delighted that you guys are doing well, and
thank you.
We're going to tell everybody how they could access Foghat music and information on the program so that people can come away with that. And I just wish you many, many, many more years of productiveness, success, happiness, and I thank you personally for the great music you brought into my life as not just a person in radio, but as a fan. And, you know, we all owe you a great debt. Roger Earl, you're a model of the whole darn thing, and we're very happy to know you.
Michael, thank you very much. In the immortal words of Lance and Dave, I'm going to roll till I'm old, going to rock till I drop.
And that is my conversation with Roger Earl that I am very proud to present to you. I think that people like Roger Earl are doing a great job of connecting the dots in contemporary culture. And certainly keeping the word of rock and roll alive and well. Thank you, Roger Earl. Really fun talking to you. And if you're interested in Foghat and what they're doing, where they're playing, how you can get their records and all that stuff, well, why don't you go to their website? It's foghat.net, www.foghat.net. And you'll be able to find out everything you want about Roger Earl and the world of Foghat. I'm Michael Harrison. Touch of Grey continues with a visit from our senior correspondent, Steve Wiseman, who's going to discuss the Affordable Care Act scams that you should watch out for. That's next when A Touch of Grey continues. Show. Drive on like a bomb.
You want a piece of me?
You want a piece of me?
You want a piece of me?
They're not movie tough guys, just ordinary people doing something extraordinary. They're all signed up on MatchingDonors.com, willing to donate their kidney to anyone who needs it. In the U.S., 19 people die each day waiting for an organ transplant, most of them for kidneys. MatchingDonors.com improves those odds by finding living, altruistic donors for patients desperately needing transplants. Go to MatchingDonors.com and meet some extraordinary people. That's MatchingDonors.com.
Want to stay informed when there are changes to Social Security? Subscribe to receive automatic email updates on popular Social Security webpages with the click of a button. Just visit www.socialsecurity.gov/govdelivery. More than 1 million people already receive updates to the pages they're most interested in. You can too. Look for the red envelope followed by a link that says Get Email Updates. To learn more, visit www.socialsecurity.gov/govdelivery. Social Security delivers.
Hi, this is Morgan Freeman. Has anyone ever said you are the picture of health? You look healthy, you feel fine, but that may not be the full picture. Colorectal cancer is the second leading cancer killer of men and women over 50. Since it doesn't always cause symptoms, you may not know you have it. The only way to know is by getting screened. Screening can find precancerous polyps so they can be removed before they turn into cancer. This is one cancer you can prevent. Plus, screening can find colorectal cancer at an early stage when the chance for a full recovery is very high. Talk with your doctor and get tested for colorectal cancer. Medicare and many insurance plans help pay for screening. Get screened. Make sure you are the picture of health.
A message from the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services and the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention.
Hi, I'm Sigourney Weaver. If you're like me, your dog or cat is part of the family, and they rely on you to take care of them. Like a family doctor, your veterinarian and staff know what's best for that special family member. So visit your vet regularly for checkups, for prevention of disease like heartworm, and for the best advice on everyday issues like flea and tick control. Your veterinarian knows best, so take the time to ask questions. For healthy pets, visit the vet.
A message from the American Animal Hospital Association.
You're age 65 and you've made your decision to keep working and delay receiving your benefits. That's fine, but don't forget about Medicare. Most people should apply for Medicare coverage within 4 months of reaching age 65. And there's a fast, convenient, and simple way to apply for Medicare in as little as 10 minutes. Online at www.socialsecurity.gov/MedicareOnly. That's socialsecurity.gov/MedicareOnly.
Continuing now with A Touch of Gray, the talk show for grown-ups. I'm Michael Harrison in the anchor chair, and we're joined the rest of the way by our senior correspondent, Steve Wiseman. Steve Wiseman is an attorney, he's a prolific author, and he is an expert about how to avoid scams. As a matter of fact, he wrote the book, The Truth About Avoiding Scams, published by Prentice Hall, and his website is scamaside.com. Steve is here now to discuss the Affordable Care Act and scams that are being perpetrated in its name, so you should watch out for them. Steve?
Thank you, Michael. Well, we've got a massive change in the healthcare law that's coming in, the Affordable Care Act, or Obamacare, as some people call it. It's going to be really hitting high gear come October 1st with the opening of these state insurance exchanges. And this is going to be the first opportunity for many, many people to see what kind of health insurance they are eligible for, and they'll be able to sign up in the months following October 1st. My problem and my concern is we may be facing the biggest threat of identity theft in history, because part of the Affordable Health Care Act is something called the Federal Data Services Hub. And this is connecting 7 different governmental agencies, the IRS, VA, Social Security, Health and Human Services, Department of Justice, Homeland Security, and Defense. And the reason they're doing this is when people are signing up, they may be eligible for certain kind of subsidies or other provisions, and they need to check this information. So the people, they're going to be called navigators, who are going to be able to access this information when people contact them as applicants, they will be able to get into this data hub, and it'll verify these people people's eligibilities. The problem is there's a lot of personal information there that could lead to identity theft. It's the largest database of accessible information ever. And the security system, the testing of the security system for this has been put off and put off. Frankly, right now it is put off until September 30th. The last testing. That's the day before it goes into effect. And very frankly, I got to admit, I'm a little skeptical no matter what they say as far as whether indeed the system will be secure. And it's going to have challenges from the outside and the inside, because when you attack, you always attack at the weakest point. And there are going to be people who are hired specifically to be these navigators to help people find which is the best plan. They're going to have access to this information. And because of cutbacks, there won't be any background checks. There won't be any fingerprinting. There are going to be identity thieves looking to get at these. Meanwhile, the GAO, General Accountability Office, did a recent report indicating concern about security. 13 states' attorneys general have sent a letter to the Health and Human Services Secretary, Catherine Sebelius, expressing concern about the security of the state insurance exchange system. Bottom line is, you got to be a little bit wary, and I would suggest to people not to jump in there on that October 1st date. You don't have to get in there on the first date. Wait and see how some of the bugs may be worked out. If you do need information on the Affordable Health Care Act, and there's going to be a lot of misinformation out there, go to the one website, www.healthcare.gov, or you can call 800-318-2596, or if you're worried about the scams, go to scamicide.com. You'll get good information in those three places.
Thank you very much, Steve Wiseman. Check it out at scamicide.com. Well, thank you, Steve, and thank you, Beverly Santinello, on the front line, our producer. Thank you, Carol Marks, for the great job that you do, and thanks for letting me fill in for you today. I want to thank Kevin Casey and certainly the entire Touch of Gray broadcast team. And on behalf of all of us, I'm inviting you, Michael Harrison here, inviting you to join us next weekend for another installment of A Touch of Gray, the talk show for grown-ups.